The Jack B Show, where pit smarts meet street smarts. Now, here's your host, Jack Berugin.
Hey, welcome, everybody. Jack Berugin here, Wednesday, January 9th. Yeah, that's what we're going to call this day. How about that? Wednesday, January 9th. Always a pleasure being with you each and every day on the show, where we try to bring a little bit of pit smarts and street smarts together, and hopefully they add up to a profitable trade. And with us today is our old friend, first time this year. How about that? And, of course, I'm talking about Alan Rohrbach, the founder of Rohr International. Alan, happy New Year to you, my friend.
And happy you happy New Year to you and all the listeners.
And there. You know what? It's good to have you on. I know we took a couple of weeks off there during the holidays and just to kind of catch our breath. And, you know, yesterday's action, I told everybody, was a market that was waiting. You know, we have earnings, which just started coming out, and folks, earnings season has begun, whether you know it or not. Alcoa reported last night after the bell, and by the way, not only did they meet expectations, but they actually had a bit of a rosy, I guess, forecast for what might be ahead as far as aluminum prices go. It's something that down the road I think we're going to have to think about. Either way, we did see the markets react globally. We did see the markets go up, which we'll be talking about with Alan in a little bit here. We saw the markets go up in Europe. We saw them go up in Asia, across the board. We don't see that big move in the 10 or the 30-year. At least we're not seeing traction on the big move. You know, we saw the big move take place, and if you remember correctly, I was talking yesterday about how that bubble is not going to burst. We are going to see a bear market. We'll see the market go down, but we won't see what I consider to be a bursting bubble with one of those fast and furious moves. It'll be more of a gradual, I guess, deterioration in bond prices, probably held up in part by a Federal Reserve that is already set. One thing I do want to mention is that Jack Lew is being nominated today to be the Treasury Secretary to take over Tim Geithner's place. I guess I'll say two things. Number one, never was a Geithner fan. I'm kind of glad to see him go. I like Lew. I think that, you know what, we could have had a worse choice. It's one of the reasons, incidentally, he doesn't really have, even though there is a little contention with the Republican hardcore leadership, I don't think his nomination will be contended all that much, and more than likely it'll be a quick nomination through Congress. But I do want to say one thing. Jack Lew was a former aide to Tip O'Neill. Tip O'Neill was there working hand-in-hand with Ronald Reagan. Remember, he was the Democratic leader of the House that was able to get a lot of those pro-growth measures, right, that Ronald Reagan and the Republicans back then, the old supply-siders, were trying to get enacted. So I guess what I am saying, folks, is that he had a wonderful mentor. He knew how to cut deals. And let's hope that this new Treasury Secretary, if indeed it is Jack Lew, is one of those guys. But anyway, let's bring him in here. We got, again, Alan Rohrbach with us. Alan, first of all, I guess here's a question for you. You know, do you even care about earnings season and the Treasury Secretary?
Oh, yeah.
Or is it something that, you know.
Well, always, Jack.
You know,
always.
Is it something that you ignore? Are you, I guess, number one, looking at earnings season as something that is, you know, going to be dictating maybe the trend for the year?
Well, it's going to dictate what I see as a transitional January. We've had a lot of strength so far, and I have my concerns with all of the various aspects of the Obama agenda, the higher taxes, the heavier regulatory enforcement. I put out a blog post yesterday where our taxulationism got prominent mention once again before they even clicked through to the Read More section. And especially the mentality that creates, not so much for the big boys who have the staffs to work their way around anything the government does, they've proven that admirably, but medium and small businesses. But the earnings season is going to be somewhat constructive, because I think the kind of things that are going to maybe be troubling as we get out to the end of this month into February on all the accelerated earnings, salaries, dividends, bonuses, etc., that were taken last year to avoid the tax increases, much like the Cash for Clunkers program with the automobiles, maybe borrowed from early 2013, where people were feeling a bit flush at the end of last year. Statistically, that's going to come through in January. Somewhat of a good sentiment, a positive hangover out of the holidays, shall we say, instead of a negative one. And then as we get later this month, after earnings are probably decent, corporate executives feeling a little more upbeat, we have to see what happens when the market starts to anticipate what is going on in the real world in January that's going to show up in the February statistics. But
well, remember, let's keep in mind, folks, and what Al and I are talking about are earnings from fourth quarter of last year,
right,
as opposed to the first quarter of this year. And, you know, and just to put it into perspective, folks, you know, if earnings come out in line, which is lower than, you know, than we expected them to be maybe 6 months ago, it's still looking like the S&P is going to earn over $100 a share. And, Alan, I guess what I'm saying to you is, unless Byron Wien is right, and Byron Wien came out bearish today on CNBC, he's looking for earnings to decelerate. He's looking for $95 a share for the S&P as opposed to the 102, which we're looking at right now. Whereas you have bullish people, which I am in the camp of, that are looking at $112 a share. Now, that's a big difference, okay? There's a $20 swing, basically, as far as I can tell, as far as earnings go, which, if we look at from a valuation standpoint, is very big. I guess what I'm trying to say is, does this set of earnings, you know, even though it's the fourth quarter of last year, you know, is it going to be an aberration in your mind? Do you look at it and maybe does it alter your perception of where U.S. markets might be heading?
Actually, it reinforces my perception of where they might be heading, because if you split the difference on those earnings expectations and randomly, you know, some companies coming in better, some coming in worse, guidance being upbeat or downbeat, if you split the difference, you're about 105. And if the Fed remains accommodative and consumer spending remains decent at all, I think the confidence level may well be there. I don't know about right away. I think, again, there was some borrowing from the first quarter in the accelerated salaries and other things I just mentioned. But if you thrash it all out and something comes along that you've been looking for a while, which is confidence, meaning multiples are going to expand. The investor psychology of what's value.
I want to stop you right there because you hit the nail on the head. Here, you know, look, $105 a share. All right, let's think about this for a second. $105 a share with the S&P at 1450, 1460 is roughly 14 times earnings. All right? You know, I guess what I'm trying to say is 14 times current earnings or forward earnings? Forward earnings, if we're looking at forward earnings, it's very cheap. All right.
Well, let's say earnings don't improve from where they are now.
Well, then that's
but if
really
the confidence
the
is there,
then you'll see an expansion.
The expansion could go
in the multiple
in a quiet way to 15. So you're looking at a 1550 S&P.
So what you're painting is a scenario, which I like, by the way, in which you can see this deceleration of earnings that Byron Wien was talking about, but basically see the market not go down because you see multiples expanding to where they should be, or the norm, in my mind.
Especially if we get past the next couple of what I call play school politics phases in Washington. It's like they're juveniles. It's I don't want to talk about Washington
but just in summary,
that if you get past the debt ceiling, which I think I'm a conservative, the Republicans have to be insane to shut down part of the government on the debt ceiling.
Oh, yeah, I think we
agree
on
that. They
have
to take their case. Some of the smartest guys, like Ron Johnson, I saw him saying, we have to take our case to the American people and just keep blasting out what the future looks like unless we do something. Win it with dialogue, not with entrenched positions.
Well, you know, look, the bottom line is this last election taught a lot of us that are on the right a lesson, and that is, you know, that anger and moral outrage alone will not win
an
election.
That is it.
Okay? I mean, it doesn't matter how angry or outraged I am. But here, before we go there, what do you think of Jack Lew? Only because I brought him up earlier, and I want to spend this first segment talking about earnings and Jack Lew, because that was what I had on my little piece of paper in front of me.
Right.
So, Jack Lew, you mentioned the debt ceiling. Is he the right guy for it? How much do you know about him? And have you been, if nothing else, have you followed maybe the Jack Lew-isms over the course of the last couple of years? Because he is chief of staff. You know what?
And an extremely smart man.
Here's
what scares me.
He took over for Rahm Emanuel, if I remember correctly,
right,
and when Rahm left. And I guess the real question is, number one, is he the right guy? And number two, if he is the right guy, you know, what are your thoughts and opinions?
Well, again, he's often the smartest guy in the room. But the difference between him and, let's say, an Al Greenspan is that Alan Greenspan would use being the smartest guy in the room to put the conversation on the levels that nobody else understood, so he got to do what he wanted.
Oh, he loved his ambiguity. You know what
Absolutely.
I mean? But what about, again, let's compare him to Tim Geithner.
Compared to Geithner, I think the part of the dilemma with Lou is he's the smartest guy in the room, and most times, and he isn't afraid to let you know it, so he gets on people's nerves. And it's going to be a real question.
Well, that's what the Republicans don't like about him.
Well,
see, there are a couple of hardcore Republicans.
Even some Democratic senators say, why don't you try to engage that kind of smarts to also do it in a more collegial manner.
Okay, now I'm going to flip that for you a little bit. I understand what you're saying. I guess my point to you is he in a position where he needs to do that? All right, because quite frankly, you know, the real question is, you know, you've got a situation, especially when you're Treasury Secretary, where maybe, just maybe, having intellectual superiority, comes in handy, especially when you're dealing with, you know, people on Congress, people, you know, who are political, because he doesn't have to be political. See, that's one of the things that I think I like about Jack Lew, even though, he pisses people off on the right and the left. All right, that means that there's something about it that you gotta like.
I'm telling you, he's Greenspan without the obfuscation. he's as smart as Al Greenspan, and he'll come right out and tell you exactly what the situation is and why he's right.
Well, here,
that's where you've got to ask whether it ends up being
Is it good or bad? I guess is the real question.
I think it's yet to be seen, but the risk is it ends up being confrontational, and then you've got to. Then you've got issues with whether people are willing to work with him or whether they're going to reject what he says in part politically or personally.
Well, here, I guess I see a big difference between having him as Treasury Secretary and any kind of dysfunction that would create, as opposed to putting Hagel, all right, in charge of defense.
Forget about it.
Who is anti-Israel, who is, you know, soft on Iran, and I am absolutely astounded that everybody out there is just not completely just, you know, flabbergasted by that choice. But that's me.
And you know what I think it is? You know, I'm always trying to think about the story behind the story. I think part of what, in a clever way, depending on your definition of success, this is what I wrote in the blog, what Mr. Obama is doing, he's putting up a certain amount of appointees or suggesting he might appoint certain people who he might know are going to be tough fights. He's distracting the Republicans from the other key issues. There's only so many hours in the day. He's forcing them to fight battles
He's deflecting
from Obamacare, and at present, he's deflecting from Benghazi.
Is Benghazi something that's still out there brewing?
I think it's huge. Lindsey Graham says there's no way Hagel's getting... That Hillary Clinton's leaving office or Hagel's getting confirmed as Secretary of Defense, short of us getting a lot more straight talk and information on exactly what happened there. And Lindsey Graham has the power to enforce that.
Are you a conspiracy buff? Do you think that Hillary Clinton is really ill, or do you think that a lot of that was fabricated?
Well, Jack, I'm a great believer in the old cliche.
I ask it right out. I mean, that's a real plain question.
I'm a great believer in the old cliche. Just because you're paranoid doesn't necessarily mean they're not really after you.
Yeah.
So it's just because some of this stuff sounds far-fetched. Not Hillary. She's a gutsy woman. And I don't think she'd be afraid for a minute to get in there.
I actually think the same thing about Jesse Jackson Jr., by the way. All right? I think a lot of that bipolar disorder, which ended up forcing him out of office, is because of the fact that there are charges ready to be filed against the man, all right, for a lot of things that they caught him doing. But I guess, you know, what I'm trying to ask is, you know, how much of it do you – because I like – you know what? Part of me has grown to like Hillary Clinton, all right? I think she's got the biggest balls in the administration. I hate to say it like that, but it's true.
She is quite a forceful individual, forced to be reckoned with.
Hey, Alan, before we take a break here, you know, I guess here's the real question for you. What you've seen happen over the course of the last couple of weeks here, because that's been about the frame of time that we haven't seen each other, have you seen things getting a little better? I mean, only because I know that we've solved the problem. As I said to you, and we agreed on it, they weren't going to turn into 435 financial suicide bombers. Are you feeling a little better about things?
Well, I again am parsing it over the course of this month, because how things end up a little later this month, once some of the good earnings are in, and earnings season is always a more buoyant time for the most part, and once the good feeling and some of the better statistics out of late last year are in the market and has to look forward. I'm talking about third week in January. Here we are on the 9th. I think around the 21st, the 25th of January, you're going to be at an inflection point in the market. But also, if the market is going to say, I don't care about any of it, I don't care about the sequester, the debt ceiling, it's all going to come right, then we have some technical levels we can talk about later, and that's where we can help people look at what you need to see if the market's going to be explosive in the first part.
Well, then let's do that when we come back from break, because I think that talking about the markets is where all of us want to go with this. This is Jack Brugin. Don't go away.
The Jack B Show will return after a few words from our sponsors.
If you owe the IRS more than $10,000, please write down this phone number. It's time to deal with your IRS problems today. Call Certified Tax now for help in all 50 states. Certified Tax's tax attorneys and experts will contact the IRS on your behalf the same day that you become a client. Isn't it time to face your IRS problems? Call today for your free, no-obligation consultation. 800-570-5115. That's 1-800-570-5115. Again, 800-570-5115.
Hello, listeners. It's Sarah Ritz here. You might know me as Little Miss Market on The Jack B Show. Don't forget, Capstone Financial School is currently offering a special rate for any consumer education, personal finance, or investing course to our listeners. If you are concerned about your financial future and need help, our 10-hour course will show you how to get the best rates, including credit scores, credit cards, auto loans, student loans, cell phone plans, renting versus buying, and record keeping to investing with low risk, high probability. The school offers a one-on-one consultation. Before entering a class, we will find out what your needs are and how to apply that information to your education experience. Our school admission counselors are available for questions regarding availability, and special rates are being offered. Also, don't forget about our Give a Free Class to a Vet program. For further details, visit our website at www.capstonefinancialschool.com or call 855-411-3232.
When it comes to trading and investing, education is the key to success. But with so many trading schools out there, how do you know which one is right for you? Hi, I'm Greg Hadley, president of Bull & Bear Institute. Bull & Bear Institute was designed by traders for traders. We give you the comprehensive education you need to trade successfully with confidence. Our classes are taught by professional traders with over 100 years of combined experience in the capital markets. Get results. We teach you how to identify price movements and take advantage of it using futures, options, stocks, and ETFs. Develop the knowledge, patience, and discipline it takes to spot the right time to act. Call 855-Y-TRADE or go to bullandbearinstitute.com to sign up for a free subscription to our exclusive newsletter. Flexible day and evening classes are always available. Call 855-Y-TRADE. That's 855-949-8723 or go to bullandbearinstitute.com.
And now back to the Jack B Show.
And hey, welcome back, everybody, again on this wonderful Wednesday here in Chicago. A little bit of sun, about 50 degrees out there, folks. About as nice as it gets on a January 9th here in Chicago.
Global warming.
I was going to say, you know, Alan, you know, you and I are Chicagoans here, so I got to tell you something. It's a little strange. On a day where the market ended up bouncing a little bit after we saw that weakness, and I got to tell you, you know, even though you saw, what, 7 out of 9 or 10 days where the market was down, it didn't feel as if it was down at all. It still doesn't feel like it's down. In fact, you know, I think one of the things that I really want to talk to you about, Alan, is, you know, number one, are we taking out some technical levels? Is it confirming anything to the upside? Let's talk a little bit about the technicals on the S&P. And then I want to talk to you about bonds, because we've seen some dramatic moves there. So let's switch gears.
And that bond story technically relates back to what you were saying about the U.S. market seeming like the Fed is still having an impact, even with the
it feels like it's buffered. I think that, you know,
that's the exact term.
Do you feel? I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth.
No,
but
that's
Do you
it's
feel
buffered.
As if that we'd see yields a lot higher had it not been for the Fed being in the market?
Absolutely, and it has a lot to do with the fact that, look, Europe's got a problem, you know, economically. So does the U.K. And yet the European and U.K. bonds acted worse than the T-note on the recent sell-off.
Yeah.
And you sit there and you say, well, why would the country with the economy that is acting better than either of the other two have the bond market that holds some critical support where the others broke their critical support?
I want to get to Europe in the next segment when we come back from break. But let's talk these markets, our domestic markets,
and
now.
Especially S&P. Right? Yeah.
Especially S&P. Give me your take on what's going on there, and then let's go to bonds.
Well, this is March S&P futures, folks. So, as always, we concentrate on the futures. What is that, Jack? It's now about a $5 discount.
$5 or $6 discount. So, right now, you know, with the S&P, for argument's sake, at 1465, look for futures to be at the 1459, 1460.
Right. So, first of all, this is part of why I'm friendly to the equities, even if they sell off in the near term on a purely technical basis. But it fits in with the entire macro technical psychology.
Now, before you even go there, last we talked, you were bearish, and you said that and you were looking for confirmation, or if nothing else, you needed confirmation to the upside that what I think you said was that the burden of proof was on the bulls at that point.
To get above 1425.30, which they did on that yawning gap.
Yep.
On the huge jump to the upside on the first day of the year, which was Wednesday the 2nd, last week. And in fact, there was also a lack of confirmation on the downside when the worries about the lack of a fiscal cliff deal into the weekend before New Year's, which was December 28th, when we took that late December sell-off and we went down to 1385.
How do you look at a gap? I mean, with you're a
good
real
question.
Technician. I mean, I've always been taught that gaps get filled. What happens if this gap doesn't get filled? Is that even more bullish? I'm assuming it is, just from my old basic technical analysis classes that I took back in the old days.
Right. Well, first of all, I am not a believer at all that gaps do get filled. You have to watch whether they get filled. They are instrumental levels to see whether a certain psychology is maintaining. Like any gap up is a little bit of a runaway psychology, or actually in the case of last Wednesday, it's a pretty significant upside reinforcement psychology. That gap was from 1444 all the way back to Monday the 31st close, Monday of last week, at 1420. You've got a 24-point gap from Wednesday's low back to Monday's close. Of course, with us being closed Tuesday for the New Year's Day holiday. So that's significant, and that's why.
And it's even more significant when you think about how low they got on Friday, all right, because they were down at
1383 and close to 85.
Yeah, I remember that because of the fact that we were obviously under the impression that there was going to be no deal.
So I think two things are going to happen here. One, if the news is disappointing or the market, you know, gets past earnings without overrunning those upside resistances, we'll get to those shortly. Initially, much as we saw yesterday, it's going to find support right around the top of that gap. But my dilemma for the bears is even if you break the market back below 1444 low from last Wednesday and below 1440, that's a residual kind of tolerance below it. Once you get down to the bottom of the gap, historically, and based on where certain longer-term moving averages are now, with this big trading range we've effectively had in the S&P since September of last year, the problem is 1425.20 area is huge support. I don't think there's any way the market goes through it, and I think it'll, even if it gets that low, it'll bounce back up around 1445.50-60 area. So there is a bullish technical bias early this year to go along with the bullish macroeconomic and reporting setup, you know, macroeconomic including earnings and all that.
So yeah, how does that play along with the bond market? Now, you see yields going up. You and I have talked about this rotation from bonds that we're going to see into equities. I know that the Fed is out there, and it's hard to fight the Fed, whether it's, you know, with loose money or whether it's with quantitative easing, where they've said they were going to buy the long end of the yield curve. But are you looking, in your mind, are you seeing this rotation of assets out of bonds into more riskier instruments, into more riskier assets?
Well, first of all, I'm seeing the primary government bonds getting hit. And yes, that is a risk-on type of mentality. So then you're seeing where, to some degree, much like equities didn't make a new high, saw copper bulge up. You're seeing the secondary bond markets in Europe, Spain, Italy, et cetera, get a bid. Everyone's saying, well, the real risk factors are mitigating. It's more like it's risk on because the threat of real risks and real crisis is going away, at least temporarily. So yes, you are seeing some of that. And on the other hand, there is quite a bit of support below these primary government bond markets. And interestingly enough, looking at the futures once again, swinging around the bonds temporarily on the T-note, because I like to compare apples to apples. And of course, in Europe, the Bund and the Gilt, you're looking at 10-year as opposed to a long bond like our T-bond future. So the March T-note future only got down and sagged marginally below a significantly major technical area in the mid-131 area. It only got to low 131s last week, and by late week was back around mid-131s. It meant it held, and that might be some of the Fed factor.
So basically what you're saying is, in my mind, the support level that needs to be breached for there to be a real break in bonds has not been breached. If anything, it seemed to go down there and hold.
Right. It basically, as you put it, is buffered for now. Because you saw the equivalent level in the gilt market, the UK market, and I know not a lot of people necessarily looking at March gilt future, but just in a nutshell, the equivalent of the mid-131s in the U.S. March T-note, which is lead contract, you know, this is rolling over month to quarter to quarter as the lead contract expires. So the longer-term chart, mid-131s in the T-note was the equivalent of about 117 even in the gilt. And the gilt cracked that and went down to 115.5. So the gilts are already looking more stressed. But I do believe, just to get around to the whole idea of, well, have we seen the turn in the bonds? I believe we've seen the turn in the bonds. I think even if equities get hit from here, people are understanding that across time, that's a riskier and riskier asset for all. It's supposed to be a risk-free asset.
I get it. And here, I guess, is the I'm gonna play devil's advocate for you because, with you, I should say, because I actually made a point yesterday, which, I am starting to think more and more about. Demographics are changing, Alan, as you and I know. And more wealth is now being concentrated in the hands of the baby boomers as they retire. These people are not going to take that money out of the 10 and 30, regardless of what their rate of return is, because they just want to make sure that it's going to be there for them.
Capital preservation.
You know, I guess the real question for me is this. How much of what we see parked in the 10 and 30 is actually going to work its way back into equities, and how much is going to stay there forever, no matter what, because of the demographic change and because you've got this same demographic we're talking about that's gone through two stock bubbles and lost a lot of equity over the course of the last decade?
I think what is going to happen is, especially as the inflation kicks up a bit, you're going to have people who have decent advisors, and a lot of the people who have money have decent advisors, end up in high quality dividend yield big cap stocks.
Well, let's hope that the people that are listening here are those people, because I got a feeling that we're going to see an entire generation of older Americans lose purchasing power parity. All right, we're going to take a few minutes, come back and talk a little bit about Europe with Alan Rohrbach.
The Jack B Show will return after a few words from our sponsors.
Are you working harder than ever at your job, but find yourself getting nowhere? Do you hate spending hundreds of dollars every week on daycare, having someone else raise your children? With our free information, you can lead a happier life, work from home, and start earning money as soon as next week.
I was a traditional business owner, and our business was affected greatly by the economy, so we were looking for another income stream. It allowed me to actually walk away from a 16-year career and part owner in a traditional business just after 8 months.
Go to freedom27.com, get out of the rat race, work from home, and start earning great money as soon as next week.
I'm a single mom. Before this business, I was over $90,000 in credit card debt alone. And now we go to Disneyland, Disney World. We've been on vacations to Hawaii. I never could have done that before this business.
Go to freedom27.com right now and change your life today. That's freedom, the number 27.com. Freedom27.com and start earning great money as soon as next week.
Hey folks, Jack Barugin here, host of the Jack B Show. One of the questions that people ask most often is, how do you learn about the markets? Well, the people at the Bull and Bear Institute have probably one of the best course curriculums that I have ever come across to teach people about the capital markets. With over 100 years of combined experience, their staff brings a wealth of information to each and every Bull and Bear Institute course. So whether you're trading futures, options, stocks, ETFs, whether you're thinking about trading them, whether you have your money with a registered investment advisor, I would highly recommend that you go out there and learn exactly what is going on. These are classes that are both live and online, AM and PM. So do yourself a favor, folks. Contact these people and understand what is going on in your financial world. Again, the Bull and Bear Institute, 855-Y-TRADE. That's 855-Y-TRADE, 855-949-8723.
If you owe the IRS more than $10,000, please write down this phone number. It's time to deal with your IRS problems today. Call Certified Tax now for help in all 50 states. Certified Tax's tax attorneys and experts will contact the IRS on your behalf the same day that you become a client. Isn't it time to face your IRS problems? Call today for your free, no-obligation consultation. 800-570-5115. That's 1-800-570-5115. Again, 800-570-5115.
And now back to the Jack B. Show.
Yeah, welcome back, everybody. On a day where the market seemed to have a nice little bounce to it. You know, saw the NASDAQ leading the way. Russell stocks did well. I like it when you see good breadth in the market, you know. And, you know, we're seeing strength even though we saw a few down days. And Alan, and we've got Alan Rohr back with us. Alan, I got a tough question to ask you before we start talking about Europe. And you know what I'm going to say to you? What do we need to take out to the upside for this thing to start running? Because it seems like we've confirmed the move to the upside as far as you're concerned, you know, on technicals. Now, as a bull, I want to know what it needs to take out to start running. Where is the, in other words, and I guess I'm going to put this in another way, where does the easy money start for me?
The easy money doesn't start, but it kicks into high gear.
There's no such
metal
thing as easy money. You know that, and I know that.
Well, and, you know, sometimes, though, we say if they get above a certain level, they're good for another 30, 40 bucks. And I'll explain why momentarily, but if the market closes more than a few bucks above that lead contract, which, of course, again, our continuation chart, quarter to quarter, and back during the September QE surge out of August into September, between Draghi saying, I'll do what's necessary to rescue the euro, Bernanke basically flipping on QE infinity, Buzz Lightyear
what
Bernanke.
What was that high?
That was 1,474.50. Okay. 1474.50. And there is some resistance before that, around 1465. After it set that high, it spent several weeks consolidating before it started.
Well, it's playing
reacting
there now, basically. I mean, it's
it
within
is
a few dollars.
It's near it now. So 65 is important, but above 75, something interesting is happening. And Jack, as we've mentioned time and again, as you caution me, and I always mention to people, so they're not thinking, why is this guy talking about this on air on a radio show where you don't have a visual medium, but there is an upward channel off that more significant November low in the S&P future, the March future. And actually, the other low for the bottom of the channel is that low from the end of December, from that low around 1483. Now, the question isn't where's the downside, because we're not anywhere near the downside trend support. That's still down around 1400. The question is, where's the top of that channel? When you run the parallel lines, we're right up into it now in the mid-1460s, right around that 1465 resistance. And, of course, it continues to move up day by day. Out in the next week, it'd be more.
Is that, Alan, so I understand how technical and how your mind works. Is that why this is important resistance to you and why it's important for it to take that level out?
Very good question, Jack. And that is exactly because we're always comparing those historic levels, and historic levels are historic levels. They'll get knocked out or they won't. But when you can have something additional that points out how that same sort of area is important to the near-term trend dynamics, then it reinforces it. It's what we call a confluence, like where a bunch of tributaries come together to make the flow of a river stronger. This is where a bunch of indications come together, and there's a couple of others as well that are not worth elaborating on here on the air. But if the market gets above 1475 now, just to round off the level of that high, it's not only setting a new high for the overall rally, and it's above the original QE surge levels, it's accelerating. When you're in a parallel channel swinging back and forth, and you come out in the direction of the trend,
the velocity of the move will pick up at that point.
The velocity of the move is also picking up. And here's the wild part on both the oscillators, you know, the differences between long-term and short-term momentum and the classical congestion, the key levels the market left lows and highs at. If you get above 1475 by any degree, there is ostensibly, technically, there's no guarantees, but there's nothing above this market until 1505 to 1515 lead contract S&P future. And that's why...
That's getting to all-time highs at that point. I mean, you're getting to, I think 1550 is the all-time high or somewhere around
there. And as importantly, it's showing the market is willing to ignore near-term nervousness and discount some of the more bullish expectations for the year right away at the top of the year.
Alan, I got to switch gears on you because we're running out of time here. I need words on Europe. You are probably one of the biggest Europhiles I know as far as the markets go out there. Give me your take. I mean, you know what? Are they all holding hands and singing Kumbaya out there now? Or do we have a, you know, where is the dysfunction still in Europe? Explain to everybody, because I talked to somebody who told me, oh, it was all yesterday's news. Europe is all fine and everything's fine. And I said, well, I think it's, you know, not quite that easy.
Well, it's not quite that easy, but two things there. One, Draghi, and we'll get into what's coming up later this week, but tomorrow is the first ECB meeting and press conference of the year. But Draghi, in saying he'd do what's necessary to save the euro, gained a lot of credibility and status on one hand, and also laid down a marker for the politicians. Each of these meetings since that August meeting, and especially their September meeting, that reinforced the QE mentality, he has put down this conditionality marker. It's going to be very hard for the Spanish or anyone else to say, well, we don't need you to come in and give us a bailout, when he's saying, if things are going bad, I will give you as much money as you need. I love the term he used at one of the late year press conferences. He said, someone asked him, well, how much money will you spend? He goes, it will be substantial. That's so, ECB's
basically saying infinity.
We will run the presses. Yeah. Yes, that's their way of saying that. So
that's that is, in other words, that is a central banker's way of saying quantitative easing infinity.
Right, and what that means as well is that we have a situation where...
Why isn't gold up then? Why isn't gold at $1,800 if that is the case, if everybody's just debasing currency?
Lack of velocity of all that monetary base, because the economies are still weak enough. Gold is now acting like an economic commodity.
It sure
not
is.
Not a crisis commodity. The crises are cooled down. It's going to create a tremendous buying opportunity.
Well, Draghi's doing what he's doing. Where are the problems out there? Germany, England, what's
still
going on?
Problem is still Spain. Problem is still the fact that Spanish banks are significantly undercapitalized compared to the loans, and the Spanish regional authorities are significantly in debt, and that's going to come back at some point.
Are they changing the rules at all in the Constitution? Are they talking about it so that they can actually capitalize the banks directly as opposed to having to capitalize the sovereigns?
I don't think that's going to happen on Draghi's watch. I think he's going to say the government, if I give you money, the government and the people have to say they're responsible for paying it back. I really do. I don't think the ECB is going to directly, only because the first thing they have to do that might take a good chunk of this year, first they need a pan-European banking regulator. Everybody knows, well, you don't have one set of regulations for all the banks. The ECB isn't handing money.
Well, they've been working on that for the last decade.
Well,
they passed SEPA, the single euro payment area. They passed, you know, MiFID, you know what I mean, which is the market. All the various things that they've passed to try to get a single currency. And more importantly, the efficiency. They can have a single currency, but it still takes them 3 days to move money from France to Germany. One of the wildest things in the world.
Right. And that's why you're not going to have direct... what would ultimately be monetary financing if the ECB is giving the money directly to the banks, much less if it's giving money to governments who have not made an effort to put their fiscal house in order. But also with Europe, the interesting thing to keep an eye on, and this was wild, Jack, and this is a very technical thing, I'll be very brief, but all these bonds tend to trade at a discount in the second months before expiration. This last time around, the March boot was at a significant premium, so in better shape.
I want you to hold that thought, because I think that's important. Let's lead with that and then talk a little bit about what's coming out over the course of the next week here, because you know what? That point you just made, I think, has got a lot more tied to it. This is Jack Barugian, folks. This is The Jack B Show. Don't go away. I got a lot more coming right away.
The Jack B Show will return after a few words from our sponsors.
A Attention business owners and individuals who owe the IRS. Do you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes? You need aggressive representation. Call Certified Tax now and speak to one of our tax attorneys, enrolled agents, or tax professionals who specialize in tax liens, back taxes, tax debt, wage garnishment, and collections. We won't waste your time. Instead, we'll be on the phone with the IRS within 30 minutes of you becoming a client. And you can become a client right now. We've settled millions of dollars in tax issues for a fraction of the cost. Find the peace of mind knowing the IRS will not be knocking at your door. Protect your home, business, and family today. We know the tax laws, and we act fast. Call today for your free, no-obligation consultation. 1-800-560-3420. Remember, we'll be on the phone with the IRS within 30 minutes of you becoming a client. That's guaranteed. Call Certified Tax at 800-560-3420. That's 800-560-3420. Again, 800-560-3420.
Hello, listeners. It's Sarah Ritz here. You might know me as Little Miss Market on The Jack B Show. Don't forget, Capstone Financial School is currently offering a special rate for any consumer education, personal finance, or investing course to our listeners. If you are concerned about your financial future and need help, our 10-hour course will show you how to get the best rates, including credit scores, credit cards, auto loans, student loans, cell phone plans, renting versus buying, and record keeping to investing with low risk, high probability. The school offers a one-on-one consultation. Before entering a class, we will find out what your needs are and how to apply that information to your education experience. Our school admission counselors are available for questions regarding availability, and special rates are being offered. Also, don't forget about our Give a Free Class to a Vet program. For further details, visit our website at www.capstonefinancialschool.com or call 855-411-3232.
Are you working harder than ever at your job, but find yourself getting nowhere? Do you hate spending hundreds of dollars every week on daycare, having someone else raise your children? With our free information, you can lead a happier life, work from home, and start earning money as soon as next week.
I was a traditional business owner, and our business was affected greatly by the economy, so we were looking for another income stream. It allowed me to actually walk away from a 16-year career and part owner in a traditional business just after 8 months.
Go to freedom27.com, get out of the rat race, work from home, and start earning great money as soon as next week.
I'm a single mom. Before this business, I was over $90,000 in credit card debt alone. And now we go to Disneyland, Disney World. We've been on vacations to Hawaii. I never could have done that before this business.
Go to freedom27.com right now and change your life today. That's freedom, the number 27.com. Freedom27.com and start earning great money as soon as next week.
Jack Marugin here. Most of you recognize me from the floor of the CME. There are a lot of trading schools out there, but I found one that actually works. The Bull & Bear Institute has the best curriculum to teach you about the capital markets, whether it's the basics of investing, intermediate or advanced trading techniques using stocks, options, ETFs, futures, and Forex. BBI has it all. So call the folks at the Bull & Bear Institute at 855-Y-TRADE. Tell them Jack B sent you and get 50% off that first course. Again, that's 855-Y-TRADE, 855-949-8723.
And now back to the Jack B Show.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, as we wrap it up here for this Wednesday. And you know what? Market did okay today. It seemed to hold up all right. Even Herbalife. All right. You know what? The stock that was absolutely under attack was up a little bit today, which, you know what? I guess at the very minimum, you got to say, because I don't know. I got no dog in that fight, folks, but I got to tell you, it's fun watching people, you know, that are so convinced of their opinions. You know, you got Ackman on one side that's convinced it's a complete scam. And then you've got, of course, you know, those that are running a legitimate business going, are you out of your mind? Alan Rohrbach, you are making a point right before we took a break about what was happening with the Bund in the deferred months, and I think that it's important. I want to go back to that and touch on that again before we talk about what's coming out.
Well, just in a nutshell, normally as you near a bond futures expiration, they trade the second month. Like, for instance, March contract, when we're trading back in December, it trades between a half a point to a point and a half on price below the lead contract. And that's been the case for the Bund and the note and the gilt. And the note and the gilt, lo and behold, this time were once again below the December contract. But the March Bund was trading at a 1.5 premium to December. Speaking of some anticipation, yields in this primary government bond in Europe, which is, again, a haven instrument, which speaks of crisis somewhere. People are, don't want to be in Spanish or Italian or Irish bonds. They run into the German bond. It was trading at a 1.5 premium.
What does that mean in yield?
That means
is it a lower yield?
It's a lower yield.
Okay.
A relatively good sized lower yield, maybe 20, 30 basis points.
So that
points.
Means that people are looking for some dysfunction. In other words, they're looking for those yields to come down further out in the curve.
Exactly. And what happened is then when we were having our fiscal cliff concerns there in the later part of December, all the bond markets were quite strong and, of course, got trashed right away on Wednesday, January 2nd. But that means, as I said, the note was down around some low-end levels it had traded at recently into the mid-131s, a key level. Gilts broke their level at 117 and went to lower levels. But the Bund, even though it sold off from being back up around the lofty level of around 145.5 or so, the Bund, because there was this premium, is only back down to the middle of its recent range and basically held in around 143 area where, let's put it in perspective, at the low of the September break, it had traded all the way below 140.
Yeah.
So the Bund is still in the context, as you said, like the note is buffered by the U.S., by the Fed, the Bund is still buffered by some sense, in spite of the outperformance of the German stock index, the DAX, and the feeling the crisis is mitigating in Europe, the Bund's still trading in a way that says, you know, at some point, these bonds may be okay to push up again. But the one thing I will say to wrap up this overall technical comment is a general thought that whereas previous, every time the market broke, because I didn't trust the equities and knew they were capable of selling off and knew the global economic situation was still weak, I get more of a feeling now that whereas previous, I could say sell-offs in the bonds, when they hold, somewhere down the line, they're going to make a new high. I think we may have seen the highs in the bonds now. I think as they get back up toward resistances, they're going to have some real problems, partly because the yields are so low, there's no real attraction there other than, as you mentioned before, Jack,
capital preservation. Hey, you know what? Yesterday we saw consumer credit come out. It's one of those numbers that I started watching because you got me watching it.
Mm-hmm.
It came out better than expected. It expanded $16 billion. I think expectations were for it to be anywhere from up 5 to up 15.
Right.
So I like that. Give me your take on some of the economic releases. What's coming out over the course of the next few days that's really got your attention, but more importantly, maybe out in Europe that nobody else is watching?
Well, I think especially we have some more Chinese data tomorrow that's going to be very interesting under the assumption that the situation there is improving once again.
I
believe it is.
I did my little monologue yesterday, and I said they are now past the soft landing. They are on the upswing.
Right. Even if in fits and starts, could be a little bit erratic. It's not a boom again, but it seems to have stabilized. And we have Chinese trade balance tomorrow. But even more than the trade balance, you know what I like to watch? And this showed up in the German trade balance earlier this week. What are the actual levels of imports and exports? You can manufacture a positive trade balance by importing less. And you look like, well, net, look, we had a positive balance. What are the actual turnover levels, which is a real good indication for the global economy? And Germany was not that good. So in China, they're looking for an overall trade surplus of about $20 billion U.S. dollars. But watch those import and export numbers is my suggestion. And also, tomorrow...
We have the ECB meeting. Are you looking for anything to come out of the ECB tomorrow?
Well, here is the turnabout on Europe. This gets back to the point you raised earlier. Now we're not in a position where, and it's part of the reason I think the equities have been quiet today. You know, they've held up since last Wednesday, but churning sideways. I think a lot of people, especially as they've been quiet this week so far, on the last, couple days or so, I think they're waiting to see what comes out of this ECB meeting tomorrow. And here's the difference. Instead of Draghi having to say something to soothe the market's nerves, I think people are holding off until they see if he's going to sound as accommodative as he did before. And if he does, it's a net positive. And so you got to be, remember we said, gee, the market might blow up through that 1465 and 75 in the S&P if it really wants to say it's ignoring the near-term mediocre news. Consumer credit was better, but a lot of the news has been a little spotty. Australian retail sales, the German trade figures, etc., they've been kind of spotty. If it says, I'm going to ignore any of the weak near-term news as long as it's still global QE infinity. If Draghi is upbeat and he's accommodative tomorrow, you have to watch to see if you get that push incrementally above 1465, and especially if we see a close above 1475 March S&P futures.
If we see, and I got less than half a minute here, another gap to the upside, leaving the gap we've already have to the downside, what do they call that? Is that an island gap? Is that what it's referred to?
If we gap back down.
No, back up.
No, you're already gapped up.
And what if we have another gap from here? What if we were to gap open again?
That's called bearish agita. That's called the bears start to grab their chest.
Okay. Because I've got this strange feeling, and only because I say it, I remember back in the 80s when the market was going up, and I had my old mentor Bing Sung. We saw that happen, and he said to me, "Jack, it's the most bullish thing that you could possibly see.
If you gapped up and went sideways for 5 days instead of reacting back down, you gap above the 62.60 we saw as a high on last Friday after the non-farm number." If you gap last week's high on a daily opening in the futures, huge burden of proof on the bears to get it back down right away or suffer the consequences.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Again, Alan Rohrbach. Alan, always a pleasure having you on, my friend.
Great being here, Jack.
All right, we're going to call it a day, folks. And for those of you that like to do it, you know what? Go to the CME website. You'll see Alan and I. We did market update today. This is Jack Baruggi, and I'll be talking to you tomorrow.
Views and opinions expressed in the preceding program are not necessarily those of this radio station or its sponsors and should not be construed as legal, tax, or investment advice. You should always consult the appropriate advisor before making any financial decisions. All rights reserved.